was, I was, that's okay. I was newly married, my first marriage, not a great marriage. Let's put it that way. And I just wasn't happy and I couldn't figure out what it was. I had been in therapy for years at that point. But it seemed like it was just getting worse and worse. My, just my overall feeling. And, I was sitting at a job at the time. I was working in insurance. So I felt like I was working for the devil himself. And, yeah, right. I was selling my soul every day. And something just whispered in my ear, look up hypnosis. Like literally it was that. And, you know, I'm like in the middle of, you know, a desk full of files and people calling. It was 2003 at the time. So I would have just been newly married, maybe like 6 months. And I found a workshop that was being held and I went to the workshop and like, I hate to say it, that it was that simple, but I fell in love from that moment. And I then saved up because at the time a past life regression here in Toronto was about $300. And that was just too much for this, you know, real, I was what, 24 at the time. And I was like, okay, so I'm going to wait to save up to go get this. And it was not the most colorful of experiences when I look back at it, but it is an experience that shook me to my core, left me needing more, left me. I still look at that back at that experience to this day. And every time that I think about it, I can gain more insight into what it taught me about myself. So it really was something that I just fell in love with. And I'm like, you know, I need to learn more. Mm-hmm. And it kind of grew from there. So yeah, it's something that I'm extremely passionate about. I think I'm really good at it just based on what my clients say. Right. And even if I wasn't good at it, I think I'd still be doing it because right. That's how much I love it.
And I think when you love it, it just comes across and it makes your art, whatever you're doing, it just makes it so much real and so much more fortified. And
absolutely.
And then the people find you who are meant
yeah.
to.
Yeah. Yeah, definitely. And it's also something that I think that there's no end all or be all in therapy. I think that there is a place for every single type of and form of healing mm-hmm. at different stages in our life and on different paths, right? It right. might be that we might be dealing with trauma. Like mm-hmm. my first few years, I worked with a local psychologist dealing with car accident victims. So mm-hmm. I was dealing with people with mild PTSD, pain, working on pain management, fear of driving, mild depression. So I've done that clinical setting. But what I realized is I think the people that we help and let me know what you think of this. The people that we help really mirror back where we are and kind of what's going on in our own space a bit. I no longer do that work just because I think that I'm just in a different place now. Right. I like working with people that are curious about themselves and kind of why they're here and yeah. what they are meant to be and, you know, stuff like that. So that's where I focus more now.
That's so incredible. As you're talking about this and you're talking about, you know, the awareness that when you're doing healing and therapy or any type of social services or human services and healing to be as inclusive as possible. And upon my own reflection when I was in grad school, at that time, I think that there was really a deficit of that. You know, we would talk about like cultural competencies and multiculturalism, which was important, but we didn't talk about people's spirituality, people's faith. It was sort of like, just be respectful. But yeah. we were taught to sort of keep ours out of it. And then when I entered the field, I didn't follow that rule.
Good for you.
Yeah,
good
I was for like, you. You know, like we're just gonna not talk about it, but we're just gonna do it.
Yeah.
Because just like you're saying, when you're connecting with people, and I love what you were saying, I think people come, we're expecting to help them, but they also change us.
Absolutely.
Just as much.
Absolutely. And we have to be open to that, I think, as being in this space, right? One of my practicums when I was in school was peer support groups. And I absolutely adore that model. I worked with adult survivors of childhood sexual abuse. And, you know, it's something that I learned that why is it wrong for us to expect people to trust us without us giving something back, right? Like we're holding this precious, delicate, most sacred of gifts, which is their trust.
Right.
And we're just supposed to be kind of automatons.
Yes.
And like, that's just, that's just so lacking in everything that I believe in that I'm like, no, I can't do that.
Well, there's that Colombian magic. It's got to come out. You're like color, life, dancing, love. Passion.
Yeah, for sure.
And
for
I imagine that comes through with your people that you connect with.
Definitely. I think that it's interesting because I have this conversation all the time with my husband. So my husband is Canadian, but he's of Italian descent. And I thought, okay, you know, there's some cultural similarities there, but he's always like, why are you yelling at me? And I'm like, I'm not, it's just my passion. You're misinterpreting my passion.
Wait, like, he's Italian and he's asking that.
So
they speak with a lot of passion.
They do. Right. So I think he's overly dramatic sometimes. And he thinks that I'm overly passionate. So
at least it's never ever boring.
Yeah, that's true.
That's a lot of love. That's a lot of love under one roof.
It is. Awesome. It is. Yeah. And it definitely comes across with my clients as well, because I am, you know, like I'm all over it when I'm calling them and I'm saying, how are things going? I probably call them too much sometimes after. And I'm like, you need to let me know how you're feeling, right? Like this isn't just one and done and go away, right? I really like, this is something sacred that I think that I do.
Yes.
And I want to treat it that way. And so how you leave after seeing me and how you feel for the next little while is just as much part of the healing as the time that we spent together.
Absolutely. And I love that. I think, you know, Carolina, what's so beautiful about this is in going, you know, I want to go back to what you were saying too, of as we both kind of experienced like being told to like shut down, but then we broke out of that because who we are is all about connection. And what I have found is that's the feedback I get of, I can connect to you or I can connect to this person because they're real, they're genuine. I realized in an appropriate way, like when I can be vulnerable and when I can be raw as a human, I felt like I felt more free as a person, but also as a professional. And I think clients were able to really heal from the hierarchy that I think, at least in therapy, there it was really, really abusive for so many years that, oh, I'm up here and you're down here.
I think generally in healthcare, that hierarchy exists in any type of kind of healing space, unfortunately. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And you're 100% right. It's now, I have to be honest, connecting and rapport building, that is a gift that, you know, the creator gave me from a very early age. Like I can tell you that I would be talking to someone at the bus stop when I was 9 years old and they would start crying. Wow. That like, it's something that I'm very grateful for now. I absolutely knew nothing of what to do with it when I was younger. And I was like, what is going on? Everyone cries around me. What am I doing? Like, you know, but now I understand it and I fully embrace it. But yeah, it's definitely a gift because when you can connect to people, you know, boundaries start to fall and borders start to disappear and walls and you're able to connect to that essence of who they are. And really, isn't that the goal when we're connecting?
Yeah.
It doesn't matter the label, the look, the color, like that, that's just, sure, it matters, but, and it makes up their experience, but I still want to be talking to that, that divinity within you,
right,
just as much as mine shows up too.
Right. It's interesting you say that phrase. I actually used to have a small business of healing, a long story, where it was called Divinity Within.
Oh, really?
Yes.
Oh, that's awesome.
We'll save that for your podcast.
Okay. Okay. Yeah.
We don't want to give away all the jewel. No, but yeah. And I think too, one thing that I'm seeing, and I love this conversation of, especially since COVID, what I've seen is much more inclusive about spirituality and healing from practitioners.
Amen.
It's like, amen. And I kind of like was a little bitter at first. I'm like, I've been holding this in for years because I wanted to be a good professional, and you all are just like living it out. Like,
yeah.
I had to like let that go of, for me, one of the things that was really has been healing and continues to be healing is when I can talk about my spirituality. Mm-hmm. And that isn't to, you know, to convert, or it's just
let it rip, Patrick.
Yeah.
Let's talk. Come on, give it
to
me.
It's like, it's not trying to force someone else, but it's also not putting me in a box where I can't talk about believing in God and faith and my healing.
Yeah.
And then people, you know, what are people pulling on from in their healing? They're pulling in from faith, whether it's in us, whether it's in themselves, whether it's in the universe. And being able to talk about that, I think, really breaks through the harshness of our world.
It's the missing element, if you really think about it. Like, we came from a world where spirit was a given, to creating a world where spirit is like, it's not talked about.
Right.
And I think we're starting to come back to the reality that it is a core part of our being, of our modes of resiliency, of coping with uncertainty. It is something that, you know, needs to be balanced just like other things, but to deny completely, I think it's just denying a part of who we are.
Yeah. And it's funny. I've had people, you know, question me in the past of like, well, what if there's nothing after this life? I'm like, then there's nothing, but I'm going to live my life believing that this is just part of the journey. And then that gives me peace. That gives me hope. And it also inspires me to do as much as I can to grow and to heal, and also to help other people. Cause I feel that, you know, I was just being interviewed on a podcast about my own healing. And I said, I think in those days where I've struggled with mental health, with anxiety or depression, I can be very selfish because my pain
is so
profound. And the more, even if it's a little bit, the more I can do for someone else, my pain can melt away.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Service.
Yeah.
What they talk about in all faiths, you know, the importance of service and, you know, walking your talk and walking those beliefs in real life. Right.
Yeah.
I think it's so important. Personally, for me, I consider my practice a spiritual practice with my clients. And in my intake form, there is actually, a question that says, if this is part that you're okay with, you know, what do you want me to refer this belief to? Do you want me to refer to God, spirit, the universe, Allah, whatever that looks like for you? Right. I'm willing to accommodate, but we're still recognizing the same thing.
Oh, I love that. I'm going to copy that. I love that.
Please do.
Yes,
please
do. I think I need to. Yeah.
Yeah.
And that's the other thing too, is, you know, when I started out in the human service field, it's very, you know, technical and blah, blah, blah. And now it's almost seem offensive if you don't have those questions, which I think is great. Like, tell me about, we were talking about immigration and stuff. It's like, what country are you from? Where were you born? What's the primary language? And normalizing that, like talking about gender and identity and what we want to be called. And I think that those conversations are pivotal to good connection and to truth.
Absolutely. Healing. Well, think about it. If we're denying it in not talking about it, or in or in purposely choosing to avoid it, we are denying whole chunks of not only our existence, but our client's existence.
Right.
You know, it's like, you know, your husband is Chilean, you were telling me. You know very clearly how much being Chilean makes up who your husband is, right, and what he brings into your relationship. If you were just to completely ignore that, I don't think it's even possible.
Right. Right.
Yet we're bringing people into healing scenarios where it's like, nope. No, what your reality doesn't exist here. That's right. I can't imagine a worse way to start working with someone.
Yeah. It's so funny. When, you know, with technology, you know, we have our backgrounds, and I was working with someone once, and my background is the very professional, like it's the one that they had, like a, you know, like the picture perfect office. And they said, "Is that your office?" I'm like, "Oh, hell no. Mine's bright blue." Like, I have random shit all over the place. Like, it's professional, but it's homey and it's warm. And I remember
I have my Star Trek, my like, Spock fan, yeah. Right? So like,
and it's I always remember that when I my first office of I need warmth in here. I need this to not be clinical white. I need it to be,
yeah,
because this is when you're working, it's also a huge part of your life. So I want to be at home at work, and I want when people to come in to feel comfortable and safe.
Definitely. But I think, you know, there's only so much of yourself that you can remove from the experience. I tell people, you know, counseling or therapy or whatever healing modality it is, there's no one size fits all,
right?
If I remind you of that wretched aunt that you had that would pick on you while you, when you were little and made your life miserable, you do not work with me. Do not work with me. That is going to stop whatever progress that you can make, because you're never going to be able to get that out of you. Or you might, but it might take a long time. Why put yourself through that?
Yeah.
There's so many people out there willing to help.
Yes.
Find someone else, right? Yep. Be honest with yourself.
Yeah. And I think that's important too, of when we're talking about privilege, like being a white male, if I don't acknowledge that, you know, it's like, first of all, I'm a male and I'm white. If we don't have that conversation, then I'm not respecting what that means for you as a person. And it's so funny how many people get offended by that, you know, the whole, and we could go into a whole rabbit hole of that, but.
another podcast. Yeah.
But it's also, it's about acknowledging who I am. It's like, I'm not saying it out of shame or fear. I'm saying, this is who I am. This is what I can offer. Just like someone may not like someone who has a blue office and long hair. I will help you find someone you want, because I want you to get your healing.
Yeah.
I want you to
absolutely
feel safe. And
honoring their experience, yeah, right? I think that it is what you've said is you're walking your talk.
Right. Right.
Right. And sometimes walking our talk is not easy. It doesn't line our pockets. Like, is there any more clarity in that one? You know, it doesn't always suit our ego, right, but you know, if you want to live in that authenticity that I hope as a healer, most of us want to,
right,
I think that's a pivotal thing, right, to do.
And the other piece too, that popped into my head as we're talking is I think we're both on the same page of, we also have to do our own work.
Absolutely.
And like you're saying, walking your talking, and I'm amazed, you know, I've met so many colleagues in my field who are advocates of healing, of coaching, of therapy, of any type of spiritual practices. And I've met just as many who don't think they have to do any work. And
oh yeah.
And I, when you enter the field, I remember one of my first jobs, I was surrounded by that. And it was so damaging to me. And when I finally got out, it was almost a little like PTSD. I felt really broken. I felt really harsh. I felt that I had lost my gentleness because everything around me was so harsh. Mm-hmm. And that's when I really appreciated that, I need that healing because I'm human.
So let me ask you, what made you step out of that? What made you say, you know, like, because it sounds like you were trained in a certain way, mm-hmm. and you went into kind of the next obvious step in the work field mm-hmm. that mimic that training. What made you kind of say, yeah, I can't do this anymore? Sorry, now I'm interviewing you.
I know. I was like, oh, this is fun. Friday Night Fielder, no filters. Giddy up. It's a really good question.
Because that's not an easy decision. That's why I'm wondering.
When management, and I'll be, you know, as politically correct as I can, put limits on me in the sense of you cannot grow anymore. There's no advancement. And I was actually thinking about this before our conversation. It's funny, it's coming up how any job I've ever left was never because of the clientele. Like, I always loved and felt honored and so grateful for the people I've worked with. It was always usually management. Not to blame, I'm saying my experience. And because they didn't, and I saw it for myself, but I saw it for my peers as well, is they weren't promoting us to grow as individuals. They weren't promoting us to grow as professionals. They weren't promoting us to grow to help our people even more.
Right.
And right. I remember just getting angry in a good way of saying, you're not going to stop my development at all. And I left, and it took me a while to get to where I am now. But I mean, every step made me who I am.
Good for you though. Good for you. I know that step's not easy,
yeah.
but it sounds like it's definitely worthwhile.
Absolutely. Well, it's kind of similar to you. It's like, yeah, you're working with the devil of the insurance companies, but there's also, you know, we grow up with a sense of security. We need that security. And taking that leap of faith into the unknown, I think is huge. It really is that test. And mm-hmm. am I going to trust in this? Well, giddy up. I guess we're going to find out.
I think, you know, it's something that I say that I see a lot, you know, and as a healing professional, I'd love to ask you this question if you're okay with it. You know, we see a lot of people that say, I want to change. I want help. I want to change. But the reality of change is huge,
yeah.
right? Because it affects the people around you. It affects how you see yourself. It is not cheap. It is not easy from an effort perspective.
Right.
It is uncomfortable. And I always say, you know, you get a lot of people that say that they want that, but few that are willing to actually take the steps to get there. Mm-hmm. Do you see that as well? Oh, like I
see it myself. I see it myself. Sweet.
Yeah.
I mean, someone says, well, you need to give up chocolate. I'm like, I'm sorry, that's not going to happen. Good day. Well, the two things that I've learned for myself and for the people that come into my world is, I learned to start telling them that my job is to not take anything from them. And in my background with addiction treatment, it was all about taking away the addiction, which makes sense logically, right? But emotionally, I'm asking you to give up one of your biggest coping skills, and that's terrifying. And I learned when I really started to learn about trauma and be trauma informed, I learned, oh, well, my job isn't to take anything away from you. My job is to support you and to give you more options. And I tried to say that as often as possible. And I can see the people just, oh my God, he's not going to punish me. He's not going to judge me. He's not going to, you know, do anything. He's going to give me choices. And that's new, unfortunately, for a lot of people. Yeah, and yeah. For myself, when I'm doing coaching, I created this term where it's like the anti-goal, where it's really easy for people to identify what we want. I want to know what you don't want.
And then you start to identify what you want by by process of elimination. Yeah, yeah.
And I always love that conversation of, I don't want to give this up. I don't want to do the hard work. I'd rather you tell me, or I'd rather tell myself, I don't really want to do the work. Okay, then I know where I'm starting from.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
And it clears it all out.
Yeah. Yeah. I think also for me in what you just shared, what came up is, and this took me years and years to learn. But we do our clients the biggest disservice by robbing them of the experiences that they're meant to have mm-hmm. on this mm-hmm. healing journey.
Yes.
Right. Yeah. Like there is a reason why it's hard. Right. Because there is so much wisdom in those steps that you're forced to take, or that life puts you on, or however you want to see it. And by us connecting the dots for them, we've taken that from them.
Right.
And it's a hierarchy again. It's our privilege.
Yes. Yes.
Coming through and saying, oh, I know better. No, you don't. You absolutely don't. And even mm-hmm. if you do, who's judging it here?
Right.
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 Yeah.
So could you tell me a little bit more about what hypnosis really is?
Yeah, absolutely.
Because I was thinking about this earlier today. I'm like, she must get so many interesting questions. And I recently had a conversation with a colleague of mine about this. What people's, for me, and I think a lot of people I know, hearing hypnosis is in the movies where I'm going to make you quack like a duck.
Yeah. Yeah. So there are, it is a huge umbrella of what you can do with hypnosis. Let's start there. So the way I use it is in a very therapeutic sense, mm-hmm. but, there are people that use it to improve their golf swing.
Oh, wow.
Right. Athletes, pro athletes, hypnosis is a regular part of their training because it's all about that mental state, right? Visualization, knowing what the end goal is, things like that. So you see a lot of Vegas shows where it's quack like a duck, things like that. That's absolutely true. That is one way of using it. That's not how I use it. So what it is it's simply a focused state of relaxation. You find yourself in that state numerous times a day. So what a very common thing that happens in a person's first session, once they're done, they're like, that didn't feel like I lost consciousness. Like I'm aware of everything that happened. And I'm like, yes, because you're in this state all the time that you don't recognize it or can pinpoint and say, oh, I'm hypnotized right now, because hypnosis really is just an altered state. So, an example would be you're driving to work. It's a regular route. You've been driving it for years. You know it very well. You get into the car and then all of a sudden you're at work and you're like, oh, I didn't even know. Like I just kind of zoned out in the drive. You were hypnotized. Same with washing dishes, watching a movie, watering the lawn. Those are all great examples of you being hypnotized throughout the day. You're aware of what's going on. You never lose consciousness. So if you, for example, you were in that drive to work and a car swerved in front of you, you would be able to respond and you would be able to take defensive action and you would be able to swerve away or whatever it is that needed to be done. So at no point are you ever unconscious. You're just focused on something else while still being present and aware of your surroundings at any given time. Mm-hmm. So for example, young children are in a state of hypnosis a lot. That's why they're kind of like, oh, head in the clouds, and you're calling them and you're like, you know, putting your hand in front of them and like, hey, you know. So it's something that's very natural. And so it during the first session or after the first session, it's always surprise. That is the one consistent thing. They're like, I didn't expect it to be that way. It's kind of cool, but I really thought or I get the comment, please don't make me forget anything. And I was like, absolutely. That's just not how it works. So
That's interesting. It's got to be difficult because there's so many misrepresentations of it. It just is with therapy and coaching.
Absolutely.
That sometimes that is a lot of the work of re-educating people, I would imagine.
It is, but I am very grateful for the gift of rapport that I have that allows me, if I'm able to have 5 or 10 minutes with someone, because rapport is something that comes easy to me. And I'm an open book. Like if you ask me, hey, how was your first experience? I'll be honest. I'll be like, you know, like my first past life was miserable. Mm-hmm. Like I wasn't rich and skinny and fancy. And, you know, like that was absolutely not what happened, but it was an experience that taught me that happiness is a choice. And I say happiness is, I believe that there's chemical depression. I believe that there are mood disorders. Please don't get me wrong in that, but we as people have an option of seeing the glass full or glass empty. Sometimes it's not easy to see it. Don't get me wrong, but I purposely make the effort every day to see the positive after I've seen the negative, I'll be honest, because that is my tendency. But I'm making that effort and seeing that misery in that past life really, really cemented that for me. And so what I say is, when people are considering hypnosis and why it ties in so beautifully with spirituality is it's not always what you want to see, but it's what you need to see that comes forward. Right.
And the way you're explaining it makes me think of mindfulness, meditation, and prayer as well.
Absolutely.
Based on what you believe in, of like helping you calm the insanity of the world to be able to connect to ourselves again and
make sense of it, right? Because like really we're asking to be sane in an insane situation.
Right. And it's funny. One of the things that I've had to do, I find technology really distracts me. And sometimes more often lately, I have to just turn everything off and put my phone on airplane. And after even 5 minutes, I just feel this relief of, I feel like I can hear myself again.
Yeah.
Like, there's no interference that I can like really connect. And then it just takes seconds for me to resolve the issue that I was worried about. But when I was on my phone, the anxiety, the distractions, but when I'm able to turn that off and just listen.
Well, it goes back to what you were sharing about COVID and how all of a sudden there's been an explosion about incorporating spirituality and everything that people do. I think, you know, one of the positives in this really crappy situation is that even if it's momentarily, many of us have been forced into a situation where, whether willingly or not, we had to turn inward a bit, right? Allowing that voice to be heard, that voice within, that whatever you want to call it, that sixth sense, that intuition, that, you know, guidance. But, you know, some people call it Holy Spirit guidance, whatever you want to label it, but it's that internal GPS had kind of an opportunity to reboot. And we're seeing the consequences of that. I think mass resignation, you know, people saying, I'm not putting up with this anymore. The protests, like whatever it is, whatever flavor that comes out in, I think we're seeing the consequences of people really starting to listen to themselves.
Yeah. And breaking through and fighting for themselves.
Yeah.
And saying, I don't want to live to work. Yeah. I want to live.
Yeah. Yeah. And not even, so live is true, but also a matter of quality of living.
Yes.
Right? Because, you know, whether it's that you're working or not working, but, you know, like you said, if you're passionate about it, people are going to resonate and they're going to come to you and, you know, things are going to start to shift, right? I think there's a lot of listening to that passion once again.
Right. And for a lot of people, I don't think they've ever been taught how to listen. And that silence, I remember a very loving and wise spiritual teacher of mine taught us, if you think you're evolved, sit in silence. I was like, oh God. And it was like, okay. And wow, you know, it was true.
Yeah.
You just see what all thoughts come up of like, oh my, I got some work to do.
So I teach an intuition class. I don't do it online. I only do it in person. I have a beautiful backyard. We do it in nature. I really kind of try and create an experience for people to connect. But one of the things that I share in that intuition class that, you know, has stuck with me for just decades is I was watching Oprah Winfrey when I was 12 years old, and they had a secure, and people that follow me will know this story because I repeat it so much because it's just so, so ingrained. So she had this security expert on.
Okay.
And he was saying it was all about like self-defense. And like one of the tips was never let them take you to a second location because your odds drop by 80% of getting out alive and, you know, things like that. So, you know, I was just watching it, you know, as a latchkey kid, I was by myself, right? I think I was probably eating a peanut butter sandwich and I'm just watching Oprah as usual. And he made this comment that I was like, oh my God. So he said that we are the only species of animals that are taught to ignore our instincts, that are actually taught on a regular basis from our parents, from society, from schooling, to ignore our instincts. He says, a woman can get a creepy feeling of a guy standing next to her and the elevator opens up and her instinct is screaming, there's something wrong. Don't
right.
go in.
Right.
But for politeness, for not being rude, they'll get in the elevator.
Right. Right.
He goes, try getting a cat or a dog that doesn't want to go into a room, into that room. That yeah. animal will kill it, will allow you to kill it before you can force it into that space. Wow. And I was like, wow, he's absolutely right. And so for me, that's foundational in the work that I do is really, and that's why I'm so passionate about and created the podcast and stuff. It's because so many of the world's problems, and I'm not trying to be naive here at all, but so many of the world's problems can be solved by people starting to hear that voice within themselves, by trusting that voice, by not second guessing that voice or turning to experts. When we have answers within us that can guide us where we need to go.
Right.
And no one, I'm not giving you those answers. Right. I might teach you how to maybe turn up the volume a bit or silence yourself enough to allow that to start to get through. But it's you that would be doing the hard work of building that and having that grow to depend on it. But, you know, I always say to people, you know, the answer is within you. I might hold the space for you to figure it out,
mm-hmm.
but you're still doing the hard work.
Right. And you're the expert on your life.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. You know, and you see that a lot in the mental health space where people are kind of robbed of that.
Right. And I think also the other piece is, I think if people did that more and owned their choices, we'd see a lot less anger and aggression.
Yeah.
And the blaming stuff that I know I've done in my life, and it never ends well.
No.
Ever. Like, oh, what role did I play in this? Oh, crap. Better go inside, do some work.
Take out the journal.
Tell me a little bit more. So what, if you can, where does hypnosis come from? What does it look like when you're doing with the clients? Is it the same for everyone? If someone had no idea and they only were basing it on TV, what would you be telling them?
So hypnosis has, because again, it is simply an altered state. So the word hypnosis is a Greek word, which if I'm remembering correctly, ties in with hypno, I think, is like sleep. In Greek, if I'm not mistaken, please, somebody's going to correct
me. I have a Greek friend, I'll verify.
Okay, good. Okay, but it ties in with that, like a mild sleep or something to that. Okay. And there's references back to like Plato and Aristotle of going into that. So really, you can be hypnotized with your eyes open. So it's not necessarily like you see somebody's completely out of it. In my office, which I'm in right now, I have three different ways that people can be hypnotized. I have a reclining lazy boy chair that is fantastic and people can just kind of sit back and be comfortable. I have a regular couch. So if they want to be kind of very straight and firm, no problem. And I also have a massage bed that if they want to be completely laid out and just, and the more that they start to trust me and build rapport, you start to really see kind of those styles come out in how they want to be relaxed and just kind of surrender into the process. When you're trained in hypnosis, there are certain physical signs that you as a therapist can see, where you can tell, they've entered the altered state.
Okay.
And again, it's something that, you never lose consciousness. So I can't put you in hypnosis right now and ask you for your bank PIN because you're going to be like, go away, Carolina.
Right.
You'll be able to just say that to me. Right. Yeah. If we're in the middle of a session, they're like, I got to go to the washroom. And I'm like, okay, go to the washroom, come back and sit back down.
Yeah.
And that's exactly what happens. So, you're in control at all times. Now there are some not stereotypes, but there are some people talk about a lot of like what Hitler speeches were mass hypnosis. Yes, but they were repeated, prolonged over time.
More like brainwashing than
more. Exactly. That's exactly it. So more like you would see in a cult.
Yes. Yes.
So again, every tool can be used for good or bad, but I'm not sitting here having you brainwashed for 6 months every day,
right,
hours after hours type of thing. So, but what it does do is it allows you to bypass the conscious part of your mind. So the mind that remembers to pay bills and the mind that says you got to wear pants to the grocery store, that frontal cortex.
Elastic pants. Okay.
They're fine. They're fine. It's COVID, of course.
Right. Oh my God. Get it comfy.
So it bypasses that rational kind of adult part that's very linear and very logical. And it allows us to go into the subconscious, which is very allegorical, very metaphorical. It's about symbolisms and areas of your mind that you don't always access, even though it's very much the part of you that's in control. And I say that because let's take, for example, chocolate that you're like, no thank you, I'm not interested if there's not going to be chocolate, right? So there is a part of the conscious part of your mind is like, okay, Carolina, you're not going to have chocolate today because we don't want to have chocolate, we're improving our diet. And I'll be like, okay. And then there's another part of your brain's like, you need chocolate now, you're gonna die if you don't have chocolate. and lots of it. And the more that you leave me waiting for chocolate, the more I'm gonna need because you left me waiting. So that part that says, no, you need it right now, that's your subconscious. Now I want to ask you, how good is your willpower to say no to that voice? Oh,
mine is not good with chocolate. I'm thinking of it right now.
Well, that goes. So for hypnotists, part of our training is the conscious is only about 5% and the subconscious is 95%. So you tell me who's going to win right?
Exactly.
And then
people think they're failing because of that.
Yeah. That's exactly it. When in hypnosis, we bypass that 5% and we go into that 95%. It's like, okay, tell me about why do you think you're going to die if you don't have chocolate? Where is that belief? Right. When did you pick it up? Does that belief still serve you? Did you learn what you needed from that belief so that maybe you can let it go and we can either mature it into a different belief or maybe just say, I don't need that belief anymore. Like, again, it depends on the scenario, but that's why I love it, because it's so effective.
Right.
Because we're really going to that root of what is that nagging, you know, what is that need for chocolate replacing?
Right.
Because we know as we know that we're not going to die
right.
if we don't have chocolate, right? But is there some other reason why that's nagging? You know, there's a lot of inner child work that happens in that space, right? So for example, I remember one therapist that I saw, it was actually a really cool technique. We were doing a bit of art therapy and we were going to explore some inner child work. And he said, please draw with your non-dominant hand. So I was drawing, you know, it's my God, it's like, it was like, I was 5 years old again, right?
Yeah.
Like, yeah. But it also kind of, I noticed that it was putting me in a bit of an altered state because I was struggling. Right. So there's a lot of different ways that we can get there.
That's
right?
Interesting.
Yeah.
And I don't know if you know this, but it's just kind of making me think of when people turn to substances to try to like calm that of, you know, that's the only time I can feel calm. That's the only time I can feel peace. That's the only time I can quiet the shouts. Do you see that in your experience with?
Yeah. So what I know is that you can, as much as you want to quiet that inner child is going to scream and is going to take and is going to make and is going to win.
Right.
So I think personally for me, and I'm a former addict, so I have a bit of experience in that.
Mm-hmm.
I say bit of experience. You don't get over addiction. It's a struggle that I have every day, but it's been 16 years now. So I'm more comfortable in that, in saying that. But I find that really addiction from what I've seen in clients is that lack of connection that the inner child has.
Right.
And that filling of that void that lack of connection creates within that inner child.
Right.
So there's a lot of great work that is done in hypnosis surrounding PTSD, surrounding addiction, surrounding kind of these obsessive tendencies that if you really kind of whittle that down, it's just this void that just kind of consumes and consumes and consumes it. You know, there's another layer of work there. I don't know if we want to go there. That's more spiritually inclined that I see at par with that. I think that there's a huge spiritual component to addiction for sure. But that might be another,
We're just going to have to do a little series. I'm seeing it. Yes.
Oh, done. Okay. Sign me up.
I mean, we're there. It's happened. Stay tuned, folks. Stay tuned. Well, you know, what's interesting is I've seen, even in therapy, I see a lot of people scoff at the idea of it, the inner child. I think that was really, I don't know if that became really popular in the 80s or the 90s or something. I don't know. But there's so many beautiful therapies that incorporate that belief. And so when people say, oh, well, you know, I don't really believe in that, I'll ask them, it's like, have you ever gotten angry with a partner? And they're like, yes. Like, have you ever gotten into an argument with that partner? Yes. Have you always been 100% mature? And they just kind of like, I don't know. Yeah. Well, you're stupid. And I, you know, like, there's another part of us that's coming out, you know, a younger part usually. And I think that's the part where in my work where I say, let's bring that part in as part of you instead of an enemy. And just kind of see what the message is there.
That took me years, years. I fought that in that it was really about, I was like, you're going to be quiet. Like,
right.
You know, and the only thing that did was just make her scream even more. Right. But you're so right. It's really a matter of, I hear you.
Right.
I recognize that this doesn't make you happy, you know, and it sounds kind of weird that you're talking to somebody, but honestly, I'm at the point in life where if it works, it works. And that's what's
well, it's kind of like my friend Bruno here. It's like, we don't talk about trauma. Like, we just, but then once you do, you're free from it. The truth will set you free.
And the minute that you give that inner child a voice, it quiets down. Right.
Yes. 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 So,
yeah.
And then when you, I remember I was reading this book about, you know, different along this line of conversation. And it said so many people think that we just have one personality, like we're just like this, you know, one thing, very rigid, but we're really much more like a diamond with so many different facets. Mm. And it was so beautiful and eloquent to think of this. So yes, I have my facet where I love my Disney characters. I have my facet where I love to work. I have the facet where family or with my dog or tired, you know, like all of these different pieces make me who I am. And yeah, sometimes, like you're saying, we just get those pieces disconnected from one another.
Yeah. Yeah. Nothing like, you know, a gym change room to make me feel 14 years old again and inadequate in, you know, with all these women that I have no idea who they are. Like I don't give, you know, the conscious part of me is like, I don't care.
Right.
But the subconscious part of me is like, oh my God, they're looking, you know, it all comes back out. So yeah. Yeah.
So we have a few minutes left. So tell us a little bit about your upcoming podcast. So we can support.
Excited. Thank you. Yes, I'm super excited. So it is called The Voice Within, and it's a podcast all about personal stories of intuition and how people use intuition to guide their everyday lives. So how a cook might use it in developing a new recipe, how a therapist might use it in wearing green and building rapport with their guests on their show. So I'm excited to explore what the magic of intuition looks like in everyday life, because I really think that there are very few experiences that we as human beings all share. We all share birth, death, hopefully love, and intuition, in my opinion. Aside from that, everything else can be very different. Everything else might be very different. Not everybody's a parent. Not everybody's a professional.
Right.
You know, not everyone has a place of privilege in many different aspects of their life. So I think we talk a lot about death, life, and love, but we don't talk enough about intuition. Mm-hmm. So that's really, I want to make intuition the story.
Oh, then, I love that.
Yeah. Yeah. And so, and it's also intuitively driven. So okay. I did not want to do it. I will be totally honest with you. I didn't want to do it, but my guidance is like, you have to do it.
Right.
And for those that are kind of wanting to explore a bit more of their own intuition, let me tell you that when you start listening to it, it's very difficult to not listen to it. Mm-hmm. And it kind of badgers you over the head. Yes, right. And so I didn't want to do it because I know how much work it is. You know how much work it is putting this on. But it was kind of something that was greater than me that was calling. Right. So, and when I do the interviews, I don't know what my guests are going to say. So the only thing that I do is I connect with them for 5 minutes beforehand, a few days before, and I just make sure that one, we can have a conversation, right? And that's about it. What shows up in the interview, who knows? It's for our intuition to let us know during that day.
That's so exciting. It's so funny. Sometimes when I'm connecting with different people, some people will be like, yeah, you have a podcast. I'll come in and talk about other people. I'll talk about anything. And then other people are like, well, what's it about? What's your focus? I'm like, I don't know if I'm for you.
Yep. Pretty
and then
much.
I send them the link and then I don't hear from them again. I'm like, yeah, it wasn't meant to be. Like,
yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I can't wait. I have invited Patrick to my podcast. So yay. I'm very excited to interview him.
Thank you.
Because again, everything that I do in my practice, in the podcast, is all about helping people's voice, inner voice, be the loudest voice that they hear. My tagline is, may your clearest voice be the one from within.
Oh, I love that. Yeah. It's funny, along the lines, I just launched something new that I actually just started this month, where it's a monthly journaling group, but you get it's every week, but it's journaling and spirituality.
Ooh, nice.
So every Friday
we have to talk about that.
Every Friday you get it, and you know, I'm just going to pull from different things about, you know, sort of like a reflection on my experiences with different aspects of spirituality. But then it comes with a writing prompt so that people can reflect on it. If they want to reach out to me, they can, to talk about it, but it also they can just keep it private. I'm really excited.
That's awesome.
See how that flows.
Journaling is such a fantastic resource for having that inner voice come through, especially when you see the writing change.
Yes. Yes. Right. And then you look back at it, you're like, oh my, did I write that?
Yeah. It's like, that's interesting. What was coming through there?
How can people connect with you follow you? If they'd like.
Yeah, sure. So, please, by all means, visit my website, soulsolace.ca, soulsolace.ca. That's my website. I'm horrible at social media, I'll tell you that right now. The only thing that I have is Instagram, and I don't post that regularly, but I'm trying. I genuinely am. And you can follow me at soulsolace.ca. That's my handle on Instagram. I love what I do. I offer a free 20-minute consult over the phone, just for you to get an idea and for me to see if I think that I can help you. I'm really driven by authenticity, and I'm very honest with people. If I'm on the phone with them and my gut says you can't help them, I'll tell you. I don't think that it's a good fit. The other thing is I have a first session guarantee. So if you don't love working with me after our first session, it's completely free.
Wow,
so there's no obligation.
Okay. Yeah. Awesome. Yeah. So my last question to you, first I hope you come back.
Like, yes, definitely.
This is like magical. It made my week. What is one piece of advice that you would like the audience to walk away from with this conversation?
Never doubt your gut. Never, ever, ever doubt your gut. Even if it tells you the most ludicrous thing in the world, never doubt your gut. And if you want to know more, Patrick, you are invited. My intuition class is, my level one is May 28th here in Toronto. So if you happen to be in Canada, please, by all means, on the house, I'd love to have you there.
Oh, thank you.
And what the other thing tied to, like, and why I brought that up is, when you start to listen to your gut, you have a particular intuitive language that your gut speaks to you through. You need to figure out if that language is clear for you or not. Because trauma, fear, anxiety can block some of that language.
Wow.
And that's what we explore when learning more about your intuition.
That's amazing. How exciting. Yeah,
it is. I'm super excited.
Oh, Carolina, thank you so much for coming on Friday Night Feels. You're now part of the family feel, or Friday Night Feels family. So
thank you so much, Patrick, for having me. This was fantastic.
And thank you for everyone who watches and who will listen. And I look forward to seeing you in a couple of weeks. Have a beautiful weekend. Goodbye.
Bye.